bit to hard dock.
Roger, Al, that's great. Super job, Stu.
As to the probe itself, it has not been taken out of the tunnel yet. As we left the control center, we were talking about when that would be done. It might be done later today when we get into a rather quiescent period as far as the crew is concerned. We, of course, want to have them look at the probe very carefully, see if they can see anything that is abnormal about it. It might well be that we will be taking TV pictures of it so the people on the ground can see what it looks like and see if they can see anything wrong with it. We do not know yet what the impact of this will be on the remainder of the mission. We obviously, and the people are presently developing very detailed procedures as to what to look for and when to do that. And we will have to convince ourselves in some fashion that the thing is indeed satisfactory for additional dockings. We're also getting set up to do additional testing on the probe. If that should prove necessary. As to the options available, the mission rules say that if you have a good LEM with a command service module, that you can go into lunar orbit even though you couldn't land. Of course, this provides you with redundant propulsion systems for getting out of lunar orbit using the LEM descent propulsion as well as the service propulsion system. So we would have redundant systems in that case. The probe is about the only thing that's questionable about the flight at this time.
At least two flashes
maybe a bright flash, followed an instant later by a more subdued flash, or perhaps a halo-like effect. There does not seem to be a set pattern in each case. Sometimes it's a very clear single flash, sometimes it seems followed by a halo, sometimes it seems followed by an adjacent flash. I guess that's about all I have to say at the moment.
Roger, Ed. I think...
Three feet per second, contact now.
Two, stop. Brake. Pro. Auto. Auto.
We're on the surface.
Okay, we made a good landing.
Roger, enters.
413 plus 10,000. That was a beautiful one.
Yeah, we're slightly off. We landed the slope, but other than that, we're in great shape.
Yep.
Right on the landing site.
Please see, let me comment that it certainly is a stark place here in Fromaro. I think it's made all the more stark by the fact that the sky is completely black.
And I can see several ridges and rolling hills of perhaps 35 to 40 feet in height. Obviously very, very old craters that are almost almost indistinct now between myself and the skyline to the north, the horizon to the north. The color that we're looking at is kind of a mouse brown or mouse gray, and obviously it changes with the sun angle. The surface, well, there are numerous craters in my field of view, some old, very subdued, some overlapped by newer craters, some that seem to be relatively recent. Most of the surface, however, seems to be fine-grained. Incidentally, I do see some linear features on the surface, very small, fine linear features. I do not think that they are erosion patterns. They may be.
We did get an extension on our planned 4 hour and 15 minute EVA, and we were able to stay for 4 hours and 45 minutes. However, we had the crew had some difficulties during the EVA, which caused us to get behind that timeline, so that even with a half hour extension, we ended up not completing all that we wanted to do. In particular, we did not get to do the traverse to the doublet area, and I believe we left off one of the soil samples. I believe it's called a 4 kilogram soil sample. We did not get that either. At least I don't think we did. And there were two or three places where it took a little more time to do things than we had allotted, and so we were not able to do this traverse to doublet. However, other than that, I think the whole thing went very well. We did get a lot of the things done that we wanted, and I think the crew really performed in an outstanding manner.
And I think the crews did an excellent job in the deployment and execution of the experiment in view of the fact that they were running behind time. We were forced to give up a few of our data points to try to help make up time, but I think that we're really quite pleased with the data that we did receive.
Trying to get oriented. I think I can see quite a few of the craters that are out my window are here on the map. There are several large enough to be seen on the map. And in addition, there are some reasonably large boulders. I will try to get it located first, and then I'll describe what I see.
Okay.
Okay. Well, it doesn't look like it's going to be quite easy as I thought, Houston, to pick out these craters I see in front of me and pinpoint them on the map and show me get a little bit better purview from the outside. Let me just pick it up with a description.
Now, Russo says he has the station keeping. He's going to hold steady while...
Houston, what that is trailing is a little bit of that foil on the bottom part of that tank area there.
Thank you, Stern.
Looks like during separation, the foil, that insulation got ripped. The other side is down tight, and the side you're looking at there is ripped out pretty badly.
All right, thank you, Stu, and we've got another good TV picture.
TV hasn't come back on through the signal processor yet. The color television requires a delay of some few seconds, here it comes, to go through a processor to restore the color signal to it. It comes down in data bits, and all of this is put back together in Mission Control with a computer mechanism. Computers seem to do everything, don't they? They help astronauts to rendezvous while moving at thousands of kilometers per hour around the moon. They get them to the moon and back. Oh, very close. We can see on the TV screen now as the picture comes in the docking apex of the lunar module of Antares. There's the docking collar, down inside of which is what's called the drogue. This is the receptor into which the probe from Kitty Hawk, the command module, is inserted, and latches are then connected. We'll find out very soon if the primary docking mode is to work. They've told Al Shepard that if Stu Roosa does not call out latch or catch, that is, catch quite quickly, when he first inserts the probe, that Al Shepard is to thrust forward and to help achieve a quick, hard latch. This is a bit different from the normal planning. Now the docking collar, the docking mechanism on Antares.
This is Houston. Request low bit rate aft Omni, over.
He wants low bit rate aft Omni.
The spacecraft are now turned toward each other.
Let me see. I wouldn't come in much closer than that, Al.
Al's only about 5 meters.
You gonna do your
wrong? 5 meters away.
Okay.
Stu is
starting my roll.
Shepard is beginning to roll or rotate the spacecraft Antares to a docking position. That's Ed Mitchell. There goes the spacecraft slowly rotating. As viewed from the command module, it's rotating in a clockwise direction, counterclockwise from the viewpoint of Shepard and Mitchell. We can see the docking cone, the hatch area, in the top of the lunar module, only about 5 meters away, almost still as viewed from the command ship.
Okay, why don't you just stop it there? I need to translate down and right anyway.
Rooster says, why don't you stop it there? I need to translate down. Some more antenna sighting problems that's causing this signal noise in the radio communications. There, it cleared up, we hope. Oh. Ed Mitchell's signal went way down. Well, we've lost a portion of our voice signal now. We can barely hear the astronauts.
Kitty Hawk, Houston, your go for pyro arm.
Mission Control says your go for pyro arm. The signal is very, very low. The spacecraft are now motionless in relation to each other. And we cannot hear the voices.
And Terry, this is Houston.
There
we'd like
go.
To get the steerable up. Pitch 170, yaw plus 55, high bit rate. And request that you and Kitty Hawk do not make contact until we establish good telemetry. Over.
Now, that's an instruction from Houston for Antares to align its antenna, as we suspected that was where the loss of the faulty signal was coming from. This is an instruction from Bruce McCandless in Mission Control telling Ed Mitchell and Al Shepard how to align the spacecraft antenna for it to lock back in with Earth. I believe it locked in just then, as you heard the noise disappear. They do not want them to dock until they're getting all of the high-gain antenna data.
Yes, but we're locked up. How do you read? Roger, loud and clear, Ed.
Now.
And we got high bit rate.
There's a lot of data being transmitted on this communications link in addition to the voice signal you hear. What's called high bit rate going through the computers being processed in real time or almost instantly to enable the mission control operators to monitor the parameters of all the systems on board the lunar module. Now, Stu Roosa is translating or moving his spacecraft, apex docking just a bit.
This is Houston, your go for the docking.
There's the go for the docking, and Roosa will be active.
Roger, we got you.
And Terry's, Ed Mitchell says, Roger, we got you. And Terry's will hold still.
How about that?
And that's Rooster saying, yeah, how about that? He'll move in, and we'll see if this probe and drogue work this time. It's anticipated there should be no further problem, but there are alternative methods of getting the astronauts back if it doesn't. In fact, we have three specific ones to talk about, should this immediate docking not work, this normal method. As we told you, Al Shepard has already been instructed to thrust forward just as soon as Stuart Roosa's probe is inserted into the receptor mechanism if Stu does not get a quick latch light, a catch light. The latches are called the big latches which clamp down later. First is the catch assembly. Then by thrusting forward, he will assist the command module in securing a good dock, a good latch. They're beginning to move closer together now. Roosa is piloting. He's bringing the nose of the command module, Kitty Hawk, with its docking probe right up above the tunnel. All of this comes out when the two tunnels are connected. Al Shepard and Ed Mitchell in the golden-colored Antares, which has served them so well in descending to the surface of the moon. Their little home away from home on the surface of the moon. And now they're back to the mothership in orbit, and they said, did it look good? Very close together. Now, Stu Roosa has some targeting assemblies to assist him in aligning this probe and drogue assembly. He can look out his command module window and see a docking target on the lunar module Antares, and by lining up a sort of a crosshair device on his ship, he can bring them together. They're very close now. We're about to find out if the probe and drogue do catch. Listen carefully for Roos's comment and for Mitchell and Shepard. They're about to dock. Here we go. Stand by. The probe is going into the drogue assembly.
Okay, we captured.
Beautiful, normal docking.
Okay. Got a hard dock.
Beautiful. Big sigh of relief being breathed around here.
Okay. All over the world there is.
You ought to try it from up here.
World and out of this world, too.
And that was Ed Mitchell saying, all over the world, there's a big sigh of relief. Ed and Al know that the whole world is watching and listening for this successful rendezvous and docking.
Let me clean up over here and I'll be with you.
All right. And there it is. You've just heard the command module, Kitty Hawk, with Stu Roosa inside, and the lunar module Antares with Ed Mitchell and Al Shepard return to the mothership in lunar orbit.
When you have a moment, go to Poo and Data for us, and we've got an uplink for you.
And now, right away, we hear Mission Control getting to the more mundane engineering tasks of guidance and navigation data to be passed on up to the astronauts. So, around the world, we hope you were listening. A successful docking. In just a few hours, the rocket on the service propulsion system will be fired, sending the Kitty Hawk back to Earth. The Antares will be disconnected and crashed into the moon. This is Rhett Turner in Houston.
Apollo 14, this is Houston. Reveille, reveille, heave out and trace up.
British, how are you?
Sweepers, man your brooms. Clean sweep down, fore and aft.
Yeah, all the sweepers are still asleep around here.
Okay, Ed, how are you all this morning?
Really great, Bruce. Really great. How's things there?
Beautiful. Everybody's relaxed down here, and we're anticipating your arrival on schedule.
Very good.
We're in a discussion with Orange Team Flight Director Pete Frank, our retrofire officer, Charles Diedrich, described the trans-Earth injection burn as very good, perhaps the best ever. The flight path angle now reading minus 6.81 degrees, well within the corridor retro reported. Also in his report, Retro noted that the ground track has shifted west by 68 nautical miles. The present aiming point coordinates read 172 degrees 38 minutes west, 27 degrees 2 minutes south. If this aim point continues to hold, Apollo 14's splashdown point would be 8 miles across the international dateline. Although Al Shepard, Ed Mitchell, and Stu Roosa went to sleep believing Tuesday was their landing day, Apollo 14 could very well splash down 8 miles into Wednesday. Or if Shepard's landing on the moon in Antares is an indicator, who knows, Apollo 14 may come down within 87 feet or less of the international dateline. This is Apollo Control, Houston.
14, Houston.
Go ahead, Houston.
Roger, Al. Just wanted to say, get a chance to say hello on the network. You guys did a great job yesterday, and I think things are beautiful shape, coasting home.
Well, thank you, Travis. Appreciate those kind words. Coming along well up here, too, right now.
Yeah, Stu's mark's looking real good, and we had a great team effort on that landing. We'll tell you about it. In fact, I nearly lost all my hair. Would you believe that?
No, that'd be pretty hard to believe, Tom.
Roger.
You're thinking about me, though. 14, this is Houston. We'd like to terminate battery alpha charging at this time. Over.
Okay.
Houston.
Houston, Apollo 14, Blank Meadow.
And Ed Mitchell responded.
It's pretty chilly down here. How's it up there?
Oh, very comfortable. 71 degrees in the cabin. What do you mean by chilly? Is it freezing?
I think we were within perhaps 100 yards or less of the ramp, and certainly in a boulder field that was right there associated with the boulders and the ramp. The rocks that we were in were ranging of different sizes, but they ranged up to 10 or 12 feet in height above us, so at times we were behind rocks that were taller than we were. Well, I guess we didn't realize that we had problems of fatigue and visibility. As far as we were concerned, our only problem was the amount of time allotted for the excursion. We, I don't know exactly what our heart rates were. Obviously, they were higher than the normal sitting rate, but we still were not operating at the maximum capacity of our backpacks for cooling, nor were we operating for extended periods of time at high heart rates. To us, it was just a matter of working against the clock. I think that we had the capability to go longer from the standpoint of fatigue. I don't believe that we were disoriented or lost at any time at all either.
I guess the first look at the moon after you burn LOI in the darkness and you come around, pitch to an attitude where you can see the moon, and it's there below you at about 60 miles, but looks like about 200 feet, and your first impression of the body, I think, is a rather tremendous thing.
I can only give this an absolutely perfect score. The flight achieved all of the objectives that we set out to achieve. I think it'll be many months before we really know how much we brought back on the samples that they collected, the data that we will see from the ALSIP. And I think more than that, we saw man really for the first time demonstrate how much can be done on one short flight in terms of experimentation that was well prepared in advance, well planned, and exceedingly well carried out.
Sure, it's nice to be back home again. So I don't think we've had a recovery as handled as efficiently and as speedily and as neat and clean as that one. We were just tickled with it, and we appreciate it very much. Of course, we did come kind of close to the target area, but that may be incidental. We have had a terrific flight, as the general points out. It's been just completely super all the way around. We've had a lot of fun. We've had some problems. But I don't think there's any question about the fact that, for me, the most thrilling moment is right now, not only because we're back from a trip to the moon, but also because I'm back home.
I don't think you one can ever be prepared, Admiral, either by prior description or photograph, for the starkness, the desolation, and at the same time the magnificence of the landscape that you see when you step out on the surface. The sky, as opposed to the beautiful blue we have here, is coal black. With no atmosphere, it's absolutely black. And compared with a very sharp horizon, which is brown or gray, depending upon the lighting at that particular moment. And it is so clear, and it is so stark, and the shadows are so sharp, not softened by atmosphere in any way, that it is probably the most stark scene of desolation one could imagine, and yet completely magnificent.
Sure, it's nice to be back home again. Appreciate to pick up Captain Moore. Appreciate your kind words. I'm glad to see the Mayor of Houston here and some other distinguished guests. And let me re-echo your words about that fantastic recovery. Listen, we were still trying to get ready to get out when the boys were ready to have us. I don't think we've had a recovery as handle as efficiently and as speedily and as neat and clean as that one. We were just tickled with it, and we appreciate it very much. Of course, we did come kind of close to the target area, but that may be incidental. We have had a terrific flight, as the general points out. It's been just completely super all the way around. We've had a lot of fun. We've had some problems. But I don't think there's any question about the fact that, for me, the most thrilling moment is right now, not only because we're back from a trip to the moon, but also because I'm back home.
Yes?
I think Al has said all that can be and need be said, but I would like to repeat the thanks to Admiral Hayward and Captain Moore, General Stevenson, for your very kind words. I think we have had a very successful trip. We all enjoyed it immensely. We had a good time doing it, and it was worth all of those little moments of doubt when the problems arose, just to conquer them and be back. And I would like to thank this recovery team for a beautiful recovery, and especially might as well bring in our Moker team that's done such a good job of getting us here in the first place. Thank you, gentlemen.
Just echo the sentiments, my own personal thanks to everybody involved in the recovery. You know, in the last 9 days, I've seen some rather fantastic sights, but I guess right up among the top of them is the sight of this carrier today when we looked out of the window of the hatch.
It's pretty good for an Air Force man.
Yeah, and speaking from an Air Force type, it's a real privilege to fly Navy, and we thank all of you.
I'll take you back a couple days. Did the surface of the moon look like about what they had briefed you on before you took off on the mission, or were there some changes from what you had expected?
Well, actually, from the standpoint of plan form of the target area, General, it looked exactly like what we'd been practicing with. As soon as the vehicle pitched over for the final stages of the approach, I think Ed and I both simultaneously recognized the target area and recognized that the guidance and steering and the trajectory were right in there on the target area. I had originally planned to land a little bit south of the targeted point because the maps and the relief contours showed that to be a little more level, a little more smooth. But in fact, it did not appear to be appropriate, so we shifted a couple hundred feet to the north and landed in an area that was smoother. It was on a little slope, but after we got out and looked around, we realized there really wasn't any level ground around there.